This is the Quality News Network. In Rome today, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice met with European and Arab officials to discuss the crisis in Lebanon between Israel and Hezbollah, which has now entered its 15th day. There was no agreement reached for an immediate ceasefire, something many of the participants favored, but the U.S. does not back. In Lebanon, the fighting between the Israeli military and Hezbollah guerrillas continues. Today in Tyre, Israeli warplanes destroyed the offices of Hezbollah's South Lebanon commander. Elsewhere, in a battle for a strategic hilltop town, reports say at least 8 Israeli soldiers were killed by Hezbollah fighters. The Israeli Defense Force is investigating an incident which killed up to 4 UN peacekeepers yesterday at their outpost in southern Lebanon. A preliminary report says that UN observers called the Israeli military repeatedly, asking that the airstrikes be stopped. On Capitol Hill today, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki addressed a joint meeting of Congress. He stated that Iraq is a front line in the war on terror. He asked for continued U.S. military support to put an end to the increasing sectarian violence. In central Baghdad today, 17 people were kidnapped, including women and children, from their apartment building in broad daylight by gunmen wearing police uniforms, according to the Interior Ministry. Yesterday, President Bush said more U.S. forces would be sent into Baghdad from other parts of Iraq to deal with the violence. Also in Iraq, Saddam Hussein has ended his hunger strike and appeared in court today for the closing arguments in his first trial. He also faces a second trial, which begins in August. In Vail, Colorado, former President Gerald Ford was released from a local hospital today. He experienced shortness of breath and was briefly admitted, according to his spokesperson. Across California, the heat wave, which has brought triple-digit temperatures, continues into its 11th day. There have been at least 56 possible heat-related fatalities. Washington State Supreme Court upheld the Defense of Marriage Act, which limits marriage to heterosexual couples. A federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit filed by a civil liberties group against AT&T to stop the company from providing its telephone records to the government. And the House of Representatives will vote this week on a measure to roll back estate taxes, along with extending tax breaks for businesses, education, and research. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
According to a U.S. trade official, China will become America's third largest export market this year, replacing Japan's place. He said U.S. exports to China rose more than 36% between January and June compared to the same time frame last year. Honda reports that sales of its fuel-efficient cars helped increase its second quarter profit to $1.22 billion U.S. dollars. The number three Japanese company is planning to add factories, including a sixth U.S. plant, to meet increasing demand. GlaxoSmithKline says it could produce hundreds of millions of doses of bird flu vaccine next year, but it still needs regulatory approval. Microsoft plans to introduce software specifically for the healthcare industry as hospitals and patient records move into the digital age. Amazon.com says its second quarter earnings were down 58%, partly due to the cost of employee stock options and higher operating expenses, including free and low-cost shipping offer promotions for customers. And the board game Monopoly is getting a digital update. In the newest version of the popular game, players can type numbers into a small scanner, then swipe their debit cards to seal the deals. That's only for the British version for now, but Hasbro is considering a similar one for the U.S. market. Light sweet crude settled at $73.91 a barrel today. And on Wall Street, the Dow is down 1 point. The Nasdaq is down 3. There's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Roll up your sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning.
Monday warrior, me's right. Today's Tom Sawyer, me's right.
It's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and expect the working people to pay for their billionaires' games, it's time for the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream each and every day. You can get in on the program by dialing in to 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And now, your host, Bruce Birch.
All right, welcome back. It's Wednesday, hump day, on the Bruce Birch Radio Program. It's about almost 7 minutes past the hour. Glad to be back with you again this afternoon, and going to be talking about a lot of different things. Today is our normal. What's normal anymore, ladies and gentlemen? I really don't know what's normal anymore. But our usual, how about that? Usual. Our usual Wednesday potpourri show. That means get out all the spices and various scents and oils and put them all in a pot and mix them up. And that's what you got for today's program. We're going to be doing a lot of different stories that I've dug up and talk about some of those items, as well as take your phone calls and do this thing, this conversation radio thing that we've created over here at the Head On Radio Network. Now, if this is the first time that you've ever heard this show, or that you've ever been on this stream, you can avail yourself of the full online experience by going over to the Head On Radio Network chat room, where a number of people are hanging out and having a conversation, usually that stays pretty close to the subject matter of the show, but sometimes it goes off in directions one cannot even begin to fathom why. But it does, and it's okay. I mean, that's the experience of a chat room, right? It's one of those things that's just sort of does what it's going to do. Also, you can go over to my blog at brucebirch.com. I've got today's show post is fairly limited, but if you have a comment on the show and you want to leave a comment that way, you do that. I'll check it occasionally, and if there's something that looks interesting, I'll bring it up on the show. Also, you can email me, bruce@brucebirch.com. That's bruce@brucebirch.com, and the last name is B-U-R-C-H, not B-I-R-C-H. I'm not a tree. I'm not a tree. I just like hugging them. There you go. All right, so good to have you back with me again today, and certainly hope that today's show will be entertaining enough for you today. We were talking yesterday about WMDs, and really interesting how I said that, you know, one of the things that I said was watch the media over the next few weeks and see what happens with attention paid to this fallacious claim that 500 munitions were found in Iraq. Yes, they were found. I mean, it's not fallacious in that they were found. It's fallacious in that, you know, the people who reported it, or the people who wanted to get this out in front of them, of you, would like for you to believe that this is the WMD that we went to war over, and quite simply, it's not. These shells were left over from the Iran-Iraq war. Yes, they are mustard gas and sarin gas. And it's quite possible we sold them to Iraq. Quite possible. Now, looking at a few of the top stories that are going on this afternoon, some of the things that are happening, you know, the Reich wing is scampering ever closer to the idea that this is World War III and Armageddon. And a little bit later on in the program, I'll have some audio from a couple of televangelists who are pushing the idea forth that perhaps this is the end times. I just wanted to bring that audio to you just to let you know what those folks are thinking. Now, you know, if you can stomach listen to someone talk and then chant a, you know, wherever that they're referring in the Bible, and the God said, Revelation 75:42, that making history in Wisconsin in November, Ezekiel 25:83, you know what I'm saying. I don't want to, like, make too much fun of it. But those guys, they get on there, and they're, you know, they're very entertaining. It's kind of a sing-song kind of a thing. You can listen to it. But I did want to bring that audio to your attention because it blows my mind some of the stuff that they're coming up with. It just really is kind of interesting how they're tying in all of this. Now, the one that was really the funniest to listen to as I was preparing for the show was Pat Robertson, because Pat Robertson, you know, he had this map, and he was going over this map, and he was pointing, you know, his pointer, his little pointer in his map, and you know, and he was describing how it was all going to happen. You know, he was trying to, I don't know if he was trying to be prophetic or what he was trying to do, but you know, you'll hear it. I mean, he ended up sounding kind of like a history teacher that was not prepared very well. So, just wanted to bring this to your attention because, you know, this is one of those things that we were talking in the past. We've talked about the Iraq. Oh gosh, I can't even remember the name, but it was a committee that was put together. I think it was the Iraq Planning Group or something like that. And it was put together, it was made up of some very key folks in the administration who were plotting the Iraq war even before, I mean, way before we had any designs, you know, that there was any official out front in the media designs on invading that country. That, you know, there's ample evidence to show that this administration had been plotting to invade Iraq since before the election of 2000. And there's ample evidence to prove that this was one of the ultimate aims of this administration, is to drag us into a war and then an occupation within the nation of Iraq. Okay, so. You know, and I'm not going to reiterate all of that, but what I am going to talk about today is apparently there has been a committee or a group that has been created to plan the next war, and you know what the next war is going to be, don't you? It's going to be Iran. We talked about this yesterday a little bit with our friend David from Maine. You know, I really, really hope that this is not true. I really hope that that all of the indications are wrong. But, you know, there's enough evidence flowing through the press that it's kind of unavoidable. The idea that invading Iran, invading Iran 6 months ago was unheard of. I mean, it was like, oh my gosh, that we can't do that. There's no way we could do that. Well, now, you know, because of the constant talk about it, it seems a little bit more doable to most people. Now, according to a recent article in Rolling Stone magazine, there's a claim that even before the bombs fell on Baghdad, a group of senior Pentagon officials were plotting to invade another country. Their covert campaign, once again, relied on false intelligence and shady allies, but this time the target was Iran. This is an article by James Bamford. Now, you know, I also wanted to make very clear, too, that one of the, and I don't want to call it a prediction, but one of the ideas that I put forth about the exit plan from Iraq was through Iran. And actually, you know, 6 months ago on my other radio program, All Things Reconsidered, which is no longer on the air, used to be on Sunday nights from 10 to 12 midnight, I talked about how perhaps, possibly, Iraq was all about invading Iran. The entire idea of taking Iraq was to have a staging ground that was ours and ours alone to put whatever armaments, people, planes, whatever, to invade Iran. That Iraq was a military exercise to give us strategic placement. Now, I hope I'm wrong. I sincerely hope that the end result of what happens in Iraq is that we just get the hell out of there and those people, you know, figure out what kind of government they're going to have, elect whatever tyrant they need to elect, because it seems to me that the only way to keep peace between the Sunnis and Shiites is to have a tyrant like a Saddam. I wish I were wrong on that too, but history has proven otherwise. And this is a scary thing. Now, another news story that I saw today mentioned along the idea that Iranians were actually volunteering to join in the fight against Israel, to join Hezbollah in the fight against Israel. And I'll see if I can't pull that up and see exactly, you know, I sort of glanced over it. I didn't read it thoroughly. But, what we're seeing in the Middle East is that the longer this conflagration goes on the Mediterranean Sea between Hezbollah, Lebanon, you know, there and Israel, the more of, you know, the longer that it goes on, the more of the other states that are surrounding the conflagration will feel a personal responsibility to become involved to some degree. Especially since the United States is openly fueling the fight, the war, the battle, whatever you want to call it, and we are funding Israel to fight, and we are sending them rockets and weaponry to use. You know, the other states are going to go, well, it's okay for the United States to fuel this side, but we can't fuel the other. Okay. Okay, well, whatever. Anyway, we're going to go ahead and take our first break of the day. We'll come back and look at this a little bit more in depth. You're listening to the Bruce Birch radio program being brought to you on the Head On Radio Network by the generous support of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream, and by supporting this programming, they're helping us to rebuild the American dream. If you want to get in on the show, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. I'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
Hi. LOL. Well, AISI, it was NBD.
Kids are spending more and more time online, and even if you heard what they're typing, you probably wouldn't know what they're saying.
Some PPL. Whatever. ISS.
They chat online in a language full of acronyms. And unless you use it every day, you won't understand it.
YIWGP.
You won't know what they're saying or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. So here's an acronym for you. HDOP. Help Delete Online Predators. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
You're back on the Bruce Birch radio program as we try to figure out a little bit of what's going on out there in the world and what motivates those who are the movers and shakers, supposedly, to do the things that they're doing. You know, it's a difficult situation to look at, Iran. It's a difficult situation because there are several side stories with Iran. And what seems to be happening over there is there seems to be a concerted effort to tie Iran into what's going on with Lebanon. Now, you know, the latest news out of CNN, the story was posted at in about 26 minutes ago. Headline says, Iranians volunteer to fight Israel. Group heads for holy war in Lebanon. By the Associated Press, surrounded by yellow Hezbollah flags, more than 60 Iranian volunteers set off Wednesday to join what they called a holy war against Israeli forces in Lebanon. The group, ranging from teenagers to grandfathers, plans to join about 200 other volunteers on the way to the Turkish border, which they hope to cross Thursday. They plan to reach Lebanon via Syria on the weekend. Organizers said the volunteers are carrying no weapons, and it was not clear whether Turkey would allow them to pass. A Turkish foreign ministry official, speaking on condition of anonymity, would not say Wednesday if Turkey would allow them to cross. Iranians, however, can enter Turkey without a visa and stay for 3 months. Iran says it will not send regular forces to aid Hezbollah, but apparently it will not attempt to stop volunteer guerrillas. Iran and Syria are Hezbollah's main sponsors, according to this article. Amir Jalalijad, chairman of the Student Justice Movement, a non-governmental group that helped recruit the fighters, is quoted as saying, "We are just the first wave of Islamic warriors from Iran. More will come from here and other Muslim nations around the world. Hezbollah needs our help." And I'm no longer reading the story. And that is why we have a very serious problem. Because there's really no way that it can be stopped once it gets started. The longer the conflagration lasts in the Middle East, in Israel, Lebanon, Israelis and Hezbollah, the longer that it lasts, the more it will be a magnet for those who feel like their cause is worth dying for. Military service is mandatory in Iran, and nearly every man has at least some basic training. Some hardliners have more extensive drills as members of the Basiji Corps, a paramilitary network linked to the powerful Revolutionary Guard. Other volunteers, such as 72-year-old Hassan Hadavi, have combat experience from the 1980 to 1988 war with Iraq. Hanavi, a grandfather and one of the oldest volunteers, says, "God made this decision for me. I still have fight left in me for a holy war." Holy war was my emphasis, and that's what he is quoted as saying. The group, chanting and marching in a military-style formation, assembled Wednesday in a part of Tehran's main cemetery that is reserved for war dead and other martyrs. They prayed on Persian carpets and linked hands with their shoes and bags piled alongside. Few had any battle-type gear, and some arrived in dress shoes or plastic sandals. Some bowed before a memorial to Hezbollah-linked suicide bombers who carried out the 1983 blast at Marine Barracks in Beirut that killed 241 U.S. servicemen. An almost simultaneous bombing killed 56 French peacekeepers. The longer the conflagration lasts, the more people who believe in fighting for God will carry out their ultimate mission that they feel is their just cause. Now, a couple things that are really disappointing about this is that there are two. And we're going to get a little bit more in depth into some of this. I'll go back to the Rolling Stone article here shortly. We have a situation where we have a clash of cultures, as war often is a clash of cultures. And you know, any culture that sees death as the ultimate release and placement of their eternal soul into nirvana certainly isn't going to give a damn if we bomb them to kingdom come. I mean, look at that realistically. You know, so in essence, what we are doing, it truly to me is a mind-boggling situation. Okay, because you know, in the past, and in a lot of what the U.S. history is that we will use the military to force our will on a certain group of people, whether it's the Native Americans, perhaps. The Vietnamese, the Koreans, the Nazis, using bombs and killing and death and carnage as a way of freeing the world, so to speak. So what we have in this kind of situation is we have, now we're fighting a group of people that believe, you know, that fighting in a jihad and dying in a jihad, a holy war, is their way of achieving the ultimate religious sacrifice. How do you fight that? How do you fight a group of people that is willing to die for their cause in every way, and that is the ultimate price? That is the ultimate gift you can give them is their death. People here in the United States value life. We value our life. You talk to some of the servicemen who are over there in Iraq, and they re-up for another tour, not because they believe in the cause that they're fighting for so much as they want to be there for their buddy, because they want to watch their buddy's back. You know, that's that places a high value on life. And there's a definite clash there, and I think that's something that is going to require more in-depth, I don't want to say analysis so much as just a more in-depth look at, you know, what is it that we could do, or that any nation, Israel or anyone, to keep terrorism at bay. I mean, if we kill them, that's what they're looking for. It's got to be a different way. It's got to be a third way, perhaps. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back. When we come back, we will get over to the free speech phone lines, take your phone calls. If you want to get in on the show today, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. That's a free call. You can also email me, bruce@brucebirch.com. I'll be right back after this break.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Bush's NSA spying scandal hasn't vanished, but it's slipping away, just as he is, from any accountability for it. This week, a court threw out a class-action lawsuit against AT&T for violating customer privacy when it played ball with the NSA, and Bush's buddies in Congress have crafted legislation that retroactively exonerates him from his obvious violations of the law. The FISA Act says, remember, the only exclusive means by which the president can eavesdrop on American citizens here at home is by going to the FISA court first and getting a warrant. Bush has flagrantly flouted that provision. Now a bill in the Senate, introduced by Arlen Specter, who should know better, would give the FISA court optional review over these NSA activities. But Bush could still choose to ignore the FISA court's determination. What's more, the bill would also legalize the data mining of phone calls that the Bush administration has been doing. It would vastly expand the government's ability to conduct warrantless surveillance and physical searches of your home and business, warns the ACLU, and it wouldn't let you sue the government in the regular courts. A similar bill's pending in the House, and both seem to have been hatched in the nest of Dick Cheney's office. If these bills fly, we'll be even less free tomorrow. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to irs.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
You're back on the Bruce Burke radio program. It's about 33 minutes past the hour, or bang, 34. Glad to have you back with me. We're talking about a number of different issues, but the first one off out of the gate is the conflagration of what's going on in the Middle East and how that ties into Iran. And before we get too far back into that subject matter, however, I would like to go right over to our free speech phone lines to our good friend Jim on line one. Jim, how are you doing today?
My young friend, I'm doing pretty well. Pretty well, but I'm having a sort of ambivalent feelings about what's going on over there in the Middle East, particularly with Iran. And as far as that particular country is concerned and their relationship with the United States, their past relationship, I can assure you the vials of wrath are filled. I mean, let's look at history here. Number one, back in the 50s, when they did have a reasonably democratic government that was elected under Milosevic, guess what we did? We reinstalled the Shah with secret police, which was a very repressive regime, just as repressive as that of Saddam Hussein. And, of course, they've never been real happy with us since then. And, you know, Bruce, I want you to look at where Iran lies. Are you familiar with Bekinder or Haushofer, the Heartland Theory?
No, I'm not, but please enlighten me.
Iran almost lies at the epicenter of what's called the world's heartland. And this is an old theory by a British and a German geopolitician who attached great importance to the location of this particular nation and nations right in this area. It's called the Heartland Theory. And okay. He who controls that heartland controls the world, essentially. It was very much of a thing that was subscribed to by Rudolf Hess, who was Hitler's deputy Führer. Hess was a student of Haushofer, and Mackinder was his English counterpart. And the reason I'm bringing this up is there are people in the Pentagon who still attach great importance to that heartland theory, to Haushofer stroke Mackinder theory, okay?
Okay.
Now, the man in charge of that country, Mr. Ahmadinejad, I take him very seriously. He's no fool. He is an engineer by training. He's a teacher by profession. And I don't think he is nearly as crazy as people think he is. But, you know, let's face it. If we want a war with Mr. Ahmadinejad, I think that there are certain elements in his personality and people who are support him enough to give it to us and to give us exactly what we want, which is exactly what we do not want. And I think we better tread very, very carefully when we deal with.
Well, I agree. I agree, Jim. You know, now, Jim, as a career guy who dealt a lot with this kind of stuff.
I used to work with people, Bruce, and, you know, I learned how to sort of think like they do. And once I got out of that environment, it scared me. It really did, because there are people there who think the unthinkable and who are willing to say, you know, regrettable but acceptable.
Well, and I think it's, you know, what I was going to ask you, and I think what bothers me most about all of this.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, it's okay. I enjoy our conversations because you have a wealth of knowledge in these areas that I think our listeners, you know, obviously that, you know,
thank you.
Get something out of it.
I appreciate that more than you know.
But what I wanted to ask you, you're welcome. But what I wanted to ask you was about the Ayatollahs, and what is the power structure there? Who does make like the final decision for these folks to actually want to go to war or to prepare to enter a conflict? Is it the Ayatollahs? Is it the president? Is it the parliament? How does that work?
I'm sure the Ayatollahs have an influence on the more extreme and radical Muslims, but you know, I would like to think that Iran is tired of war. And they're tired of repressive regimes, and they want to get on with their daily lives. They want to have at least something of the good life of this earth while they're there. Not all Muslims are like these jihadist freaks who think that there are 70 virgins awaiting them on the other side of the River Styx, okay? They're not all like that. And there's some very reasonable people over there. And I think Mr. Ahmadinejad may be torn between the extremist elements, and he has to pump up a certain amount of rhetoric. I mean, look who he followed. Look who was there less than 15 years ago, Khomeini.
Mm-hmm.
It was a virtually a theocratic state. And I would hope that Mr. Ahmadinejad could provide some type of transition between a theocratic state and a more secular state if given half a chance. And I have great sympathy for the Iranian people. They can get a rough deal. And, you know, I hate to say it, buddy, none of these people are going to deal with George Bush and his crowd. None of them are.
Well, to me, it's like what he represents is sort of the Christian version of the other side of the coin with the Muslims. I mean, I think that, you know, they're, you know, his own religious or I shouldn't say his religious beliefs, because we have no idea what they really are. I mean, this guy will cuss out
really
in public, and I mean, he chews with his mouth open. I mean, you know, no self-respecting Methodist would do that. But
you know, and he was an Episcopalian at one time.
He was.
Mm-hmm.
That was back when he was drinking, I guess.
Well, I'm a whiskey pig. Okay. That's okay. That's fine. That's okay. That's so fine. That's all right. That's okay. But anyway, I understand.
It was, It was a joke. But my point is that, you know, the Bush has, you know, a lot of right-wing religionists who are... I'm sorry. Okay. He has these religious guys who are in it, who are you know, the ones who directed him to put up Samuel Alito. They have a strong influence on our government, and that fact and that overt amount of access to the president has to be seen around the world as a very, you know, by other religious nations as unduly able to be oppositional.
So. Well said. And, you know, they view us as being just as extremist as any Muslim jihadist. Think about it. I mean, you've got these people over there like Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and, oh, God, who are some of the rest of those creeps of the what Bob Kincaid calls the right-wing religious industry? And these people are no more Christian than a fence post outside my window. And, you know, these people are just, I really don't know what would make them happy.
Well, I really don't know
what is the end game for them? I mean, what do they hope to accomplish out of this? Is it power? Is it money? Well, if Armageddon comes, they won't have any need of that. And I hate to tell them, I think they're going to be rudely surprised at where they end up. And it sure ain't going to be the pearly gates of St. Peter.
I wish there was a study that would indicate whether or not, you know, the rates of increase of people getting saved and joining a church are consistent with Israeli wars.
I'm
watching these, you know, I have a couple of clips that I'm going to play a little bit later, and I'm watching these guys, Pat Robertson and Jack Van Impe in particular, and they looked happy to be talking about Armageddon. They looked happy to be talking about the possible end of the world, and it, you know, at least in their view, the possible end of the world. And it was like, my gosh, these guys are getting off on this.
Well,
I mean, they really were.
Well, it was because they think that, you know, basically that they're going to be, I guess, transfigured, and they're going to be introduced to a new heaven and a new earth where there is no more pain, no more sorrow, no more suffering, no more tears. And that's basically the driving locomotive behind their belief system. But, you know,
let me ask you this before we're going to the Bible,
but I've read a little bit about it myself, and I do know that it does say that if in fact that does occur, these guys aren't going to have anything to do with it, and they don't know when it's going to happen. And if I remember from my Bible teachings of my youth, not even the angels in heaven know when it's going to happen, if in fact this should occur. And, you know, and Jesus is not going to come back in any gold Rolls Royce or Cadillac. He won't need that, I can assure you. I mean, he won't need that at all.
He'll be a homeless guy.
But, I mean, you know, what these people believe and how they have basically gotten themselves, worked themselves up into a frenzy over this thing, I mean, it's almost as if they're trying to cover their bets. And if this doesn't happen, they will have, you know, completed their you know, their access into the inroads of power. Remember a couple of months ago or weeks ago, we were talking about these people from Patrick Henry University who were being planted throughout the government?
Yes.
And these right-wing religious zealots. Well,
yes,
you know, I hate
to say
it, this country,
yes,
what they want to do is turn it into a theocracy. And if it lasts, they want to basically, I think, exclude everybody else who doesn't feel the way they do, because they can be pretty intolerant. And history has taught us that.
Indeed.
And so I don't know.
Indeed.
I think I'm just as much of afraid of people like Pat Robertson and George Bush and that whole crowd as I am any Muslim cleric, including Mr. Ahmadinejad. You know, I think I could probably sit down at a table and have a more cogent and, you know, structured conversation with Mr. Ahmadinejad than I could with Pat Robertson, because every time I see Pat Robertson, I feel like I need to take a shower.
Imagine how he feels.
I'm not sure how to take that, Bruce. I mean, you know.
You know what I'm saying. I mean, the guys, you know, these guys. It's entertainment. I mean, they're melding what they believe, you know, supposedly believe with enough flash to create entertainment. And
well, you know,
and
Jim and Tammy were entertainment. They were funny. I mean,
they were bad entertainment, but they.
I mean, I used to call them collect just to see those little blue-haired ladies refuse to collect phone calls. I mean, they were just at the point of being ridiculous, and Tammy Faye would be so drugged up when she came on, and to do Enough is Enough, and she even did a record called Enough is Enough. I mean, you know, I kind of like her. I think she's funny, and you know, she was funny. That was entertainment. But these guys. They're not entertainment. Not when you've got Pat Robertson coming on the air saying we ought to kill so-and-so and assassinate the head of a foreign state. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To me, that ain't entertainment. And Jerry Falwell is just as mean and cruel and just as ugly as any form of satanic demon that he espouses to hate. And some of the rest of these people... I don't know who they think they are and where they think they've gotten their mandate. I mean, I don't know either.
But you know, it's you know, and a friend of mine has you know, we had a conversation the other day. He said he watches Falwell occasionally, and you know, I just it's not what Falwell says behind the pulpit that's so egregious. It's what he says when he starts getting into the political arena. And, you know, these guys need to stay out of the political arena, just like the guys who are in the political arena need to stay out of the religious arena. You know,
well, see, Bruce, these guys are in the business of empire building, okay? And that's what they've done with their colleges and universities and their mega churches. And they've built up a very, very comfortable lifestyle for themselves. And, you know, they're loving every minute of it. They're laughing their way to the bank. At the expense of the American people and their destiny. And that's something I don't like to see. And also, what I hate to see most is they're making a mockery of something very beautiful, and that's my Christian faith, and I don't like it.
Yeah. Well, Jim, I need to go to a break and see if take care of some other stuff. So I do appreciate you calling in, and look forward to hearing from you real soon.
You bet. You have a good afternoon, right. My friend. Take care of yourself now.
You too. Thank you, and thanks for the call.
God bless.
That's our good friend Jim. God bless you too. That's our good friend Jim from an undisclosed location somewhere in the northern hemisphere. I think he was somewhere in the northern Moronosphere yesterday. But we're glad to have him back with us. If you want to get in on the show, you can dial 1-877-443-2366 or send me an email, bruce@brucebirch.com. I'll be right back.
James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from the inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage, when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
You're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. Little intro there by the good and the very dead, Frank Zappa. Thank you, Frank, wherever you are. We were talking about what's going on with Iran, and I really appreciate Jim's ability to provide the historical perspective on events over there. He's one of those guys who has great experience dealing with this kind of stuff, and we really appreciate his input on the program. It's very valuable. So thank you, Jim, for your call earlier. Now, we were talking about where this seems to be going is toward the idea that this whole conflagration isn't about religion so much as it is about extremists within those religions. And we have extremists here in the United States, just like there are extremists in Muslim religions, and there are extremists in the Jewish faith. There are extremists in almost every facet of every religion that there is, aside perhaps from Zen Buddhism, and maybe the extremists of the Zen Buddhism were Gandhi. I don't know. Extremists for peace. I like it. I like the idea. But if you follow where I am headed with this, is perhaps putting forth the idea that we as a nation have been hijacked by a group of extremists, the neocons. These aren't your father's conservatives, folks. These are people who are crusaders. And they're supporting crusading actions, and they're taking crusading actions, and one can only assume that for the next 2 years, as long as this president is in power, that he will continue this crusading, this extremist kind of foreign policy approach. It's a hammer foreign policy approach. And what I mean by that is that if everything that you see looks like a nail, then, Or should I say, if the only tool that you have is a hammer, that everything looks like a nail. That's right. That's what I meant to say. And that's what it appears to be. Bring them on. The foreign policy of bring them on. Shoot them all, God's sort about.
I'm the president. I'm the decider. And what I do is I decide. And today is here's what we're gonna do. Here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna send us a bunch of smart bombs over to Israel, and we're gonna let them Israelis. We're gonna take them. We're gonna give them some guns. See, and some of them bunker bombs. Some of them big old bunker bombs. That's right. Some of them big old bunker bombs. And we're gonna tell them where they can bomb the terrorists. See, we're gonna tell them where they can get that terrorist. And then we're gonna push the button and then watch them all go get blasted. The kingdom come. You know, because God did this. It's all because God said it was okay.
All right. Yeah, I know. Every day I have to channel a little bit of George just to feel like I really have lost my mind. But it really is. It's absolutely repugnant. And so, you know, you look at the situation and you think, what really is the idea for invading Iraq and for staying in Iraq? And why is it that the news stories about Iran have become increasingly frequent? As if to prepare us for the eventuality of going to war against Iran. You know, we have a long and troubled history with Iran, a long and troubled history with Iran. Every time that we've ever dealt with Iran, you know, it's not ever turned out well. You know, we had the whole situation with the hostages there in the 70s, Ronald Reagan, God rest his soul, his conservative soul. Ronald Reagan, made a deal with them to keep the hostages until Carter was out of power. I'm sure the hostages appreciated that. So we have, you know, and now we're talking about the Iranians are talking about sending people over to fight in Hezbollah. That is just, or not the Iranians themselves, but I should say citizens of Iran. Good citizens of Iran have decided to, on their own volition, without sanction from the government, go ahead and fight a war that has nothing really to do with them. But I see that there is a small, very small step to take, and this could be a very interesting, you know, I'm going to use the word interesting, situation that I don't know would have any kind of easy finish or easy way out of. And it all happened over the capture of two soldiers. Two soldiers, that's what it was about. Of course it wasn't about that. That was the impetus. That was the reasoning. You know, that was the one thing that happened that would give some of these folks the excuse to do what they wanted to do. And, and I'm not going to say what Israel is doing is right or wrong. I'm not going to say what Hezbollah is doing is right or wrong. But I will say that killing each other and the overwhelming insanity of the war that's going on between those two places is absolutely wrong. And we don't have, there's just, and they won't come to the table and they won't do anything to try to do it, to try to come up with some sort of solution. We're going to be back after the top of the hour. We got our news coming up. It's about 59 minutes till the hour. And once we come back, we'll take listen to some of those clips I've got. You listen to the Bruce Birch Radio Program. This is being brought to you by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights right here on the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
Quality News Network. In Rome today, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice met with European and Arab officials to discuss the crisis in Lebanon between Israel and Hezbollah, which has now entered its 15th day. There was no agreement reached for an immediate ceasefire, something many of the participants favored, but the U.S. does not back. In Lebanon, the fighting between the Israeli military and Hezbollah guerrillas continues. Today, entire Israeli warplanes destroyed the offices of Hezbollah's South Lebanon Command commander. Elsewhere, in a battle for a strategic hilltop town, reports say at least 8 Israeli soldiers were killed by Hezbollah fighters. The Israeli Defense Force is investigating an incident which killed up to 4 UN peacekeepers yesterday at their outpost in southern Lebanon. A preliminary report says that UN observers called the Israeli military repeatedly, asking that the airstrikes be stopped. On Capitol Hill today, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki addressed a joint meeting of Congress. He stated that Iraq is a front line in the war on terror. He asked for continued U.S. military support to put an end to the increasing sectarian violence. In central Baghdad today, 17 people were kidnapped, including women and children, from their apartment building in broad daylight by gunmen wearing police uniforms, according to the Interior Ministry. Yesterday, President Bush said more U.S. forces would be sent into Baghdad from other parts of Iraq to deal with the violence. Also in Iraq, Saddam Hussein has ended his hunger strike and appeared in court today for the closing arguments in his first trial. He also faces a second trial, which begins in August. In Vail, Colorado, former President Gerald Ford was released from a local hospital today. He experienced shortness of breath and was briefly admitted, according to his spokesperson. Across California, the heat wave, which has brought triple-digit temperatures, continues into its 11th day. There have been at least 56 possible heat-related fatalities. Washington State Supreme Court upheld the Defense of Marriage Act, which limits marriage to heterosexual couples. A federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit filed by a civil liberties group against AT&T to stop the company from providing its telephone records to the government. And the House of Representatives will vote this week on a measure to roll back estate taxes, along with extending tax breaks for businesses, education, and research. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
According to a U.S. trade official, China will become America's third largest export market this year, replacing Japan's place. He said U.S. exports to China rose more than 36% between January and June compared to the same time frame last year. Honda reports that sales of its fuel-efficient cars helped increase its second quarter profit to $1.22 billion U.S. dollars. The number three Japanese company is planning to add factories, including a sixth U.S. plant, to meet increasing demand. GlaxoSmithKline says it could produce hundreds of millions of doses of bird flu vaccine next year, but it still needs regulatory approval. Microsoft plans to introduce software specifically for the healthcare industry as hospitals and patient records move into the digital age. Amazon.com says its second quarter earnings were down 58%, partly due to the cost of employee stock options and higher operating expenses, including free and low-cost shipping offer promotions for customers. And the board game Monopoly is getting a digital update. In the newest version of the popular game, players can type numbers into a small scanner, then swipe their debit cards to seal the deals. That's only for the British version for now, but Hasbro is considering a similar one for the U.S. market. Light sweet crude settled at $73.91 a barrel today. And on Wall Street, the Dow is down 1 point. The Nasdaq is down 3. There's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
It's time for another hour of conversation radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back
with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce.
And you're back on the Bruce Birch Radio Program for the second hour of this cornucopia of interesting extremism. I don't know what else to call it. We're talking today about a lot of different items dancing around the same main topic. And really the main topic is boiling down to be at this point extremism on the parts of all involved in what's going on in the Middle East. But you know, we're going to slip away from that for a moment, and the main reason why is because I want to get off into another couple of topics. I just, we've been talking about, all of this extremism and these, the fact that Iraq may very well be the launching point. Before I do that, though, before I get away from it, I want to play a couple of audio clips. The first one. This is about a couple of minutes long, and we'll go ahead and play it in its entirety, and you can hear sort of the idea that the religionists are putting forth, the ideas that they're putting forth regarding this whole thing. This is Jack Van Impe, who is talking about what's happening in the Middle East.
What they're saying now is the last Bible prophecy that's going to be fulfilled. Psalm 83:4, let us cast Israel off from being a nation that their name be no more in remembrance. And that's what starts Armageddon. As they divide the land of Israel, Joel 3, verse 2. Yes, Armageddon's coming, Revelation 16:16, but I repeat, it's not going to be the end of the world. Billions are going to be standing there to meet Christ after the conflict has ended. And then they'll beat their swords in the plowshares and their spears in the pruning hooks. Isaiah 2, verse 4.
Yesterday, a lady said to me, "Oh, Rexella, I love your program. I'm anxious to hear what your husband's going to have to say about the Middle East. And can he bring some comfort to my heart?" And I know you can, Jack.
Oh, Rexella, there is war now in the Middle East. We'll have more to say about that a little later in the program, but do you know that when the Lord Jesus Christ returns to earth to set up his kingdom, when he comes as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, Revelation 19:16, to rule and reign for 1,000 years, Revelation 20, verse 4, that his feet hit the Mount of Olives and it splits from east to west, Zechariah 14, verse 4. But you know why he comes? Armageddon is not the end of the world. It's never going to end. We made a video last week that's going to be released this fall. And we got hundreds of verses proving that the world will never end. For Isaiah 45:17 and Ephesians 3:21 both say it's a world without end. Amen, amen. So when he comes, Armageddon's not the end of the world, Revelation 16:16, but Christ comes to put an end to the fighting that's going on in the Middle East and globally. And, of course, that's Revelation chapter 11, verse 18.
We made a video, and in the video, we're proving that this is all going to be the way it is. I couldn't believe that. Did you hear that? They made a video about it. So therefore, it must be true. So therefore, it has to be. There's no way that it can't be true because they made a video. Now, the second clip that we're going to hear is the Honorable, well, I don't know if I would call him that, but anyway, it's Pat Robertson. And Pat Robertson is going to give you a geography lesson.
John, ladies and gentlemen, you might like to know what the Bible has to say about Israel in the last days. Is this the beginning of Ezekiel 38? We don't know, but it's getting close. Here's what the book of Ezekiel tells us in the 38th chapter. Well, that's the prophecy of Ezekiel, that in the latter days, a coalition is going to come against Israel. And some of us have been waiting. Is this the end of it all? No. Is this what precedes the coming of the Lord? I don't think so. But it's clearly prophesied by Ezekiel, if you believe that. Now, let's look at the map and to see what he's talking about. Here is Israel in the middle. It's called the navel of the earth. This is one described as Put, which we identify as Libya. The other is Kush, and Kush is not Ethiopia. Kush is Sudan. And this is Sudan, which is, of course, an Islamic state. Libya is an Islamic state. And beyond that, what are we talking about? Gomer is somehow in the Caucasian area in here. These are Muslim people. Beth Togarmah may be Turkey. We're not quite sure exactly where all these people are. But Gog and Magog, Meshek, is up in what is now the Russian Federation. Rosh means head, but it also is apparently Russia. So Russia is going to be involved with Persia, which is down here. This is where Iran is. And so you can see the difference. If Iran can come across, it would have to cross Iraq, but it's trying its best to kind of overrun Iraq. But anyhow, here's Syria on a border with Iraq. Here's Iran right up on the close part. Syria, of course, borders Israel here, and Turkey borders there. Now, you've got Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan. All these stands are Islamic republics. They are friendly to us, but nevertheless, that's what it is. Where is Tubal? Up here someplace in Magog. You can read in Genesis where they are, but the idea was that in the latter days, when Israel is gathered back from the nations, the people are living at peace in their land, there is going to be this armada of essentially these Muslim nations joined with Russia to invade Israel, it says, in the latter days. Now, are we seeing a prelude to that? We're not sure. But certainly Iran is making noises. They want to do it. The Sudan would undoubtedly kick in because they are fanatical Muslim in their leadership. Muammar Gaddafi has been relatively quiet, but conceivably Libya could come on board. This doesn't include Egypt, doesn't include Jordan, doesn't include Saudi Arabia or Yemen or these nations. And lo and behold, these particular nations are not joining in the current fighting against Israel. They, as a matter of fact, they're condemning Hezbollah. They don't want to have any part of it, and they're hoping that Israel will take them down a notch. They're hoping that the Iranians and the Syrians will come down a notch from where they are now, because they're making trouble. They don't want it. But nevertheless, that's the situation described by the prophet Ezekiel. You ought to read your Bibles, Ezekiel 38. Can this be a prelude to that? I don't know, but it could be. We're beginning to see the lineup of Iran, Russia, Sudan, Libya, and the Caucasian Muslim republics, maybe Chechnya, some of those would play a role in this. We don't know. But when it's all finished, God says, I'm going to destroy them all, and I will bring glory to myself.
That would be one very angry God, very angry God, to destroy all of them and You know what I'm saying. Okay. I couldn't help. I was listening to that and laughed a few times. He even mentioned our good friend Gomer, Gomer Pyle there. What are we going to do with these people? All they want to do is deal with all these stands and, all kinds of Jikistan and all the stands over here. Anyway, that was the religionist moment of the day with the Reverend Pat Robertson of the 700 Club out of Hampton Roads, Virginia. We're going to go ahead and hit our quarter of the hour break, and when we come back, we'll get over to some other topics. If you want to get in on the show today, you have that opportunity. You can avail yourself of our free speech phone lines, and we'll pick up the dime. 1-877-443-2366 is the number. Bruce at BruceBirch.com is my email. I'll be right back.
Everywhere is freaks and heroes, dykes and fairies. Tell me where is sanity. Tax the rich, feed the poor. Tell their honor, rich no more.
Kincaid.
Let's go back to the phones, and we are joined by Beauregard T. Clampett, I'm told, on line one.
Hi there, Bob.
Well, Mr. Clampett, how are you, sir?
That's fine, sir. You all have had a ruckus on the airwaves this evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on this subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
So you catch on quick, I tell you. You're very quick, very quick. But I did want to just, because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I've had to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing's still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
We won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good man underground.
Head on.
Hi, my name is Joanne, and I have mannequinism. Well, I did have it, but I'm not a mannequin anymore. Doctors said over 75% of my body turned into plastic. They said it's because I wasn't active in my community, because I didn't vote or volunteer or I don't know. All I wanted to do was cry, but I couldn't. Because I had plastic eyes.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
I've seen you in the markets. I've seen you in the streets. And at your political conventions. Talking of your crusade, talking of your nation, and other things too terrible to mention. And you proclaim your Christianity, you proclaim your love of God, you talk of apple pie and mine. I just got one question, and I want an answer. Tell me, who would Jesus bomb? Maybe Jesus would bomb the Syrians, because they're not Jews like him.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's about 18 minutes past the hour here on the Head On Radio Network. And, that's all we're going to do with the religion thing today. We're just going to leave that alone for the rest of the day just because I think it's, except for maybe if we're dealing with the result of something else. But, I just was looking at that, thinking about that today and how tough it is, how hard it is. That we have a group of folks that has sort of taken over the foreign policy of the world, and what do we have? What are we left with? Well, I'll tell you what we're left with. We're left with the idea that the only thing that's left to do. Is to just sort of accept it and move on, and that's not acceptable to me, because we have situations where people are in dire straits, and we're spending billions upon billions upon billions upon billions of dollars on bombs when there are people starving, and people homeless, and people who need services and who need help to raise them out of poverty. And yet, instead, we're shipping bunker buster bombs that probably, I mean, God knows. I mean, I'm sure I could find how much they cost. I'm scared to look. That cost, I would imagine into the hundreds of millions of dollars per bomb. We're shipping them over there to kill people. So there you go. We got our priorities straight at least, don't we? Yes, we do. Bush, that is... the one that's leading the country. Bush and Congress are spending taxpayer dollars to mislead women. A congressional report exposes how so-called crisis pregnancy centers are giving women inaccurate, deceptive information. Henry Waxman, representative of Democrat of California, ranking member of the House Government Reform Committee, released the investigative report entitled False and Misleading Health Information Provided by Federally Funded Pregnancy Resource Centers. This report outlines how 20 crisis pregnancy centers in 15 states that received federal tax dollars misled or provided false information to investigators who called asking about their services. Nancy Keenan, the president of NARAL, Pro-Choice America, says, quote, anyone looking for health care information or services deserves full, unbiased, and relevant facts. A woman facing an unintended pregnancy is no different. She goes on, I applaud Representative Waxman for his continued support of honesty, freedom, and privacy. His report exposes how the Bush administration is using taxpayers' dollars to mislead women in this country about their reproductive health care. Crisis pregnancy centers spend taxpayer dollars to spread deceptive and false information. According to the report, these CPCs, crisis pregnancy centers, have received more than $30 million in federal funding since 2001, while additional capacity building grants have been distributed to 25 centers. Investigators found that 87% of these centers give women misleading information, including spreading the myths that choosing abortion increases the risk of breast cancer and sterility, each of which has been debunked by expert scientists, doctors, and breast cancer awareness advocates. NARAL Pro-Choice America and its affiliate network have long worked to expose the deceptive practices used by these false clinics. Only in Bush world. Only in Bush world. And, it really is just absolutely repugnant that, you know, you would have to, in this day and age, and I guess maybe their idea is that the ends justify the means. Wait a minute, am I slipping back toward religious stuff again? Oh, my gosh. Okay, just to give you a couple of examples here. For example, in Minnesota, Robbinsdale Women's Center, an anti-abortion pregnancy center that counsels women against abortion, is located across the street from the Robbinsdale Clinic, PA, which offers a range of medical care, including abortion services. According to the St. Paul Pioneer Press, several women who accidentally went to the center instead of the clinic complained that the center pressured and deceived them. One woman even filed a complaint with the Minnesota Attorney General. She says, quote, in trying to find the Robbinsdale Clinic, I mistakenly went into the women's clinic across the street. When I told them my name and appointment, they had me take a seat and had a counselor talk to me about anti-abortion, at which time I learned I didn't have an appointment there at all. They then said that they did not know of the facility that provided abortions. While CPCs may falsely suggest that they do not provide, or that they do provide, a full range of reproductive health services, they clearly do not. Some centers do not have any medically trained or medically supervised personnel on staff at all. Even in the cases of centers that are overseen by medical professionals, there are no regulations in place to ensure that women will receive medically accurate information and services that meet an appropriate standard of care with respect to all the women's reproductive health options. Women are being misled by the advertisements for these clinics when they call to inquire about available services and prices. The staff may evade the question or lie outright in order to attract the women into the center. These folks are being funded through taxpayer dollars. In 2002, a University of Maryland student posed as a woman worried that she was pregnant. She called a crisis pregnancy center and made an appointment at the center's office. During the call, she asked if they knew anything about abortion. She said they blew the question off. They just said, come in and we'll figure it out. Once at the clinic, the student mentioned that she might want to consider abortion. At that point, a woman at the clinic said, oh, you don't want to do that. You'll mess up your body. The student indicated that the woman at the clinic was really trying to scare me into not having an abortion as an option. In fact, the Anti-Choice Pearson Foundation's How to... this is the title of a manual. It's called How to Start and Operate Your Own Pro-Life... I can't believe this. How to Start and Operate Your Own Pro-Life Outreach Crisis Pregnancy Center. Is this Outreach Crisis Pregnancy Centers for Dummies? Is that what the name of the book? How to Start and Operate Your Own Pro-Life Outreach Crisis Pregnancy Center. The manual tells staff that there is nothing wrong or dishonest if you don't want to answer a question that may reveal your pro-life position by changing the caller's train of thought by asking a question in return. An example the manual recommends answering the question... As an example, the manual recommends answering the question, are you a pro-life center, with, we are a pregnancy testing center. What is pro-life? After all, our name of the game is to get women to come in and do the abortion chambers. Be put off by nothing. Let nothing stop you. The stakes are life and death. There you go. In other words, the so-called counselors. Now, I have done a fair bit of training in the counseling profession, okay? And I'm not going to say that I'm a licensed counselor by any stretch of the imagination, but I will say that I've done a fair amount of training in that area, okay? And in my training in that area, one of the things that I have been taught is in the interest of self-disclosure, if you find that there is something that is going to get in the way of you providing a clinical relationship of a religious idea or something, that you need to recuse yourself and allow an unbiased client or an unbiased counselor to come in and to do the work. Because how can you truly counsel someone if you're biased by their beliefs? Apparently, that doesn't work in the pro-life movement. What does work in the pro-life movement is deception and lies to trying to draw people in. That's what it says in this manual. The manual called How to Start and Operate Your Own Pro-Life Outreach Crisis Pregnancy Center. So, you know, and there's so many. I'm looking at a bunch of different examples, and it really is just disgusting. An Arizona man took his 16-year-old daughter to a crisis pregnancy center after she had been raped. After being shown brutal footage, including pictures of dismembered fetuses, the man claimed, quote, they just emotionally raped her. They are advocates for the unborn and to hell with the troubled person. They had an axe to grind and they just terrorized her. And these organizations are receiving federal money. Now, we're not talking about organizations that help the poor. We're talking about organizations that terrorize the poor, that terrorize those who don't have an option, who are stuck in a situation that they can't get out of on their own. They're stuck. It's sick. These people are sick. I'm going to take a break and take a deep breath and hopefully come back to give you a little bit more of a positive attitude. But it blows my mind that these people will do this kind of stuff. You listen to the Bruce Birch radio program right here on the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
Did you hear them talking about it on the radio? Did you try? On the wall, did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. So Bush brought his hand-picked ruler of Iraq, Nouri Kamal al-Maliki, back home to headquarters. Not sure that's going to do any good. For one thing, al-Maliki is proving to be a reluctant puppet, criticizing Israel for its invasion of Lebanon and demanding the right that any country should have to prosecute people who commit rape or murder on their territory, even if they're wearing the uniform of the U.S. military. Bush can't always get what he wants. It's a lesson he's only faintly beginning to learn. He and Maliki also have an enormous headache on their hands, and that's how to control the violence that's embroiling Baghdad. Every day, another dozen or two dozen bodies appear at the morgue, tortured and shot at point-blank range. Sometimes they're Sunni, sometimes they're Shiite, but they're always dead, needlessly, cruelly dead. When leading U.S. commanders on the ground over there say that the Shiite-Sunni violence is even more threatening than the insurgency, you know things have gone from bad to worse. So Bush is deploying more troops in Baghdad now, smack dab in the middle of the civil war we were assured wasn't going to happen. Look out. It only gets uglier from here. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Native American culture has helped shape many things, from the structure of the U.S. government to the foods we eat at the dinner table. But where Indians lack presence are newsrooms. I'm Brian Bull of the Nez Perce Tribe of Idaho and a member of the Native American Journalists Association. Please go to Naja.com and learn how you can join. We need people familiar with Native culture to tell our stories and set the record straight against stereotypes and misperceptions. Naja, raising the next generation of storytellers.
Ready? Not. Ready? Not.
Your body's been ready for quite some time.
Not
ready. But not your mind.
Ready?
Not.
Ready?
No way. You have lots to do before you have a baby. But don't forget to take folic acid today and every day to prevent birth defects one special day. So when all of you is ready, that baby of yours will be ready to take on the world.
Ready?
Not. Ready.
You know, I love coming back from a break with that song because it just, John Fogerty just nails it there, just nails it. All right, we're back, and you're listening to the Bruce Birch radio program here on the Head On Radio Network. If you want to get in on the show today, you got a little time left to do it, about 25 minutes or so. The telephone number is 1-877-443-2366, and you can also email me, bruce@brucebirch.com. I've got a few more. No, that's great English there, Bruce. Good job, Brucey. Good job. I have a few other stories that I wanted to release. Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania has released a final draft of his anti-signing statement bill this afternoon. That's right. Yep, that's the one. And he's going to be calling it, drum roll please, Presidential Signing Statements Act of 2006. I'm not going to read the entire text of the bill, but essentially what it does is it's, you know, I haven't really even read the full thing yet, but the summary, all the summaries that I've read, state that the bill is about opening the door, creating a path so that the Congress can sue the president over the signing statements that that George has so easily adapted to. For those of you who aren't aware, signing statements that have been they've been used a long time, but usually what they're used for is for the president to sort of in the president's cabinet to explain how they see how they believe they need to implement the law. However, this president has used the presidential signing statement as, in essence, a veto without the veto. For instance, the bill that was supposedly to end torture that passed the Senate 90-9 way back when, that was by John McCain, the president signed the bill into law and then didn't follow it. Okay? The findings of Congress finds the following. Number one, while the executive branch has a role in enacting legislation, it is clear that it is a limited role. Article 1, Section 7 of the Constitution provides that when a bill is presented to the president, he may either sign it or veto it with his objections, and his veto is subject to a congressional override by two-thirds majorities in the House of Representatives and Senate. The second finding, number two, as the president signs a bill into law, the president sometimes issues a statement elaborating on his views of a bill. The practice began in the early 1800s, and such statements have been issued by presidents including James Monroe, Andy Jackson, John Tyler, FDR, Dwight Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and George W. Bush. Finding number four, more recently, some courts have begun using presidential signing statements as a source of authority in the interpretation of acts of Congress. Finding number five, this judicial use of presidential signing statements is inappropriate because it, in effect, gives these statements the force of law. As the Supreme Court itself has explained, Article 1, Section 7 of the Constitution provides a, quote, single, finely wrought, and exhaustively considered procedure for the making of federal law. Presidential signing statements are not passed by both houses of Congress, pursuant to Article 1, Section 7. So they are not the supreme law of the land. It is inappropriate, therefore, for courts to rely on presidential signing statements as a source of authority in the interpretation of acts of Congress. The Supreme Court's finding number six, the Supreme Court's reliance on presidential signing statements has been sporadic and unpredictable. In some cases, the Supreme Court has relied on presidential signing statements as a source of authority, while in other cases, it has conspicuously declined to do so. This inconsistency has the unfortunate effect of rendering the interpretation of federal law unpredictable. As the Hamdan v. Rumsfeld case demonstrates, the justices of the Supreme Court appear to disagree with one another on the propriety of reliance on presidential signing statements in the interpretation of federal law. The Supreme Court, with its nine competing perspectives and its jurisdictional restriction to cases and controversies, may remain unable to resolve this difference of opinion and establish a clear rule abjuring such reliance. Essentially, ladies and gentlemen, a signing statement does nothing but confuse. It does nothing but create a bunch of confusion. Why? Because it's not law. And why? Because the Supreme Court, while it has, again, it has looked to such signing statements as law, to others it hasn't. To a case where it feels like, and that's just, you know, that's not an equal treatment of the law. We are not a nation of men. We are a nation of laws. Excuse me, we're not a nation of men and women. Pardon me. we are a nation of laws. And those laws are, you know, the supreme rule in a democracy. Right or wrong, we follow the law. Now, I could get into go off on a long, lengthy tirade about why this president is absolutely wrong, and he's not followed the law, and he has created more problems than he's been worth. You know, and I would sound just like everyone else out there. But what I do want to present to you is, and this is the one thing, I don't know what Arlen Specter's got up his sleeve on this. You've heard me rant and rave about Arlen Specter before on this radio program because, you know, he's the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And the Senate Judiciary Committee has in the past, up until about a month and a half ago, rubber stamped every damn thing that George Bush ever did. And refused to, they started off the whole thing many, many moons ago with refusing to swear in Gonzales. The Attorney General of the United States could come in and testify, and the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Arlen Specter, refused to swear him in. I mean, if they're going to have a little, you know, informal question and answer session, they should have done it out in the cloakroom. Or perhaps over a steak across the street there at the restaurant. Instead, they chose to have their little informal conversation there in the Senate hearing room, in the Senate Judiciary hearing room. While on the people's dime and while under the pay of the taxpayers. But let's not swear him in because he might say something that later on he could get into trouble over, right? Something called perjury. So as a result, we don't know what's... I mean, you know, why even record it? Why even show it on C-SPAN? It's a talk. It's not testifying. I'm sorry. But of late, the Senate Judiciary Committee has been, or at least Arlen Specter, has been pushing to get, I don't want to say get back at the president, but it sure seems like it. It sure seems like that's what he's attempting to do with this law. Because as it stands, the president cannot be sued by Congress right now. This bill would have to pass Congress. Now, what if the president decided to veto it? now we're talking about something that would be fun. We're talking about something that would be crazy. Oh, great. Another little story I'm going to run for you as soon as I get done with this one. But, you know, the president could, I suppose. The president could veto this bill or this law after it passes Congress. Now, if the president does veto it, does that mean the Congress could pass it? Well, of course they could, but would they? And why is Specter doing this now when if we had a majority of Democrats in power, of course it would pass? Moving right along from that story, slamming into another one, citing national security, a federal judge has thrown out a lawsuit aimed at blocking AT&T from giving telephone records to the government for their use in the war on terror. U.S. District Judge Matthew F. Kennelly said the court is persuaded that requiring AT&T to confirm or deny whether it has disclosed large quantities of telephone records to the federal government could give adversaries of this country valuable insight into the government's intelligence activities. Citing national security. Everybody and their uncle knows about this. What's so secret about it anymore? There is no secret about it anymore. You know? Absolutely nothing secret about it. But I guess maybe we should look up Matthew Kennelly. How about that chat room? Look up and see if Matthew Kennelly is a Republican or not. And I'll bet we might know why he dismissed the suit. We're going to take our break, our quarter of the hour break. We're going to come back and wrap up this present and hand it to you with a silver lining. You listen to the Bruce Birch radio program on the Head On Radio Network. If you want to get in on the show, you got a few minutes left. 1-877-443-2366. I'll be right back.
Founding fathers and mothers, and we got the founding sisters. Don't forget about that, sir. It's Wicked Witch of the North, huh, Peter?
Jim, I'm the Wicked Witch of the South. Glad to meet you, buddy.
Well, listen, I sent you an email. You haven't replied.
Dude, I replied to your email. I told you that we wanted to have you in chat.
I can't do it. They won't let me in.
Oh, please.
Is this a good idea?
You're a real, both of you are a total camp.
Bruce, I love you more.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God. I'm going to have to put treat to my Barbara Cartland novels and my box of bonbons.
Oh, God, the world's first bitch fight on internet radio. This is
this is great. This is great. So do I have to flip a coin, or what's the deal here?
Don't miss Bruce Birch, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, my name is Joanne, and I have mannequinism. Well, I did have it, but I'm not a mannequin anymore. Doctors said over 75% of my body turned into plastic. They said it's because I wasn't active in my community. Because I didn't vote or volunteer or I don't know. All I wanted to do was cry, but I couldn't because I had plastic eyes.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Homeland Security advisories are at the highest levels, so you and your family need to be prepared. Develop a family disaster plan and discuss it with your family. Plan how you'll stay in contact with each other and identify meeting places if you're separated. Designate a friend or relative outside of your neighborhood to contact if you can't return to your home. Go to www.floridadisaster.org for more information. This message has been brought to you by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, the Florida Broadcasters, and this radio station.
Listen, man, adding fractions is no big deal.
Nah?
Nah. You just got to find what they call the common denominator. Let me show you.
All right.
Now, see these bottom numbers?
Yeah.
These are the denominators. That one's a 4 and that one's an 8.
Mm-hmm.
You just double both of these numbers so that becomes an 8 too. Then you add them up.
Man, you sure make this easy.
Charles Bennett always dreamed that after college he'd return to the old neighborhood as a teacher. But without the money for tuition, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Oh, sure.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. Call 1-800-332-UNCF. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
That's our good. That's Warren Zevon right there with a song called "Model Citizen," which is actually the antithesis of what he's describing there. Now, what I did a little bit of research over the break, and found a few items about William Kennerly, or Kennelly, actually, it's K-E-N-N-E-L-L-Y, or Matthew, excuse me, what am I thinking? I've lost me mind. When I find it, I will let you know. U.S. District Court Judge Matthew Kennelly today granted a motion by the United States Department of Justice to dismiss a lawsuit brought by the American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois on behalf of Chicago author Studs Terkel and other prominent Chicagoans, challenging the actions of telephone giant AT&T in divulging the telephone records of its customers to the federal government without lawful authorization. The court agreed with the government's argument that the need to protect state secrets necessitated dismissing the lawsuit. The ACLU of Illinois says that they respectfully disagree with the court. You know, what the problem is here is that there is a law to deal with this. There's a law to deal with this. It's called FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. We've talked about it ad nauseum. We've looked at it. We've dealt with it. We've turned it around. We've flipped it up inside and down and around. And what we've discovered is that the president thinks that he was given authorization by the authorization, the terrorist authorization of, you know, back in October of 2001. He thinks it gives him carte blanche to do whatever the hell he wants, and he's wrong. Absolutely, absolutely wrong. FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, outlines very, very clearly what the Justice Department or you know, what needs to happen in order for there to be surveillance and, you know, regarding intelligence of this matter. Now, what's happening, though, is that the president and his minions at the NSA have increased their surveillance to include that of Americans as well. Now, we all know that that's it's highly illegal, and he should be impeached for it, completely impeached and thrown out of office. Okay? All right. I mean, that's just that's the opinion of the Head On Radio Network. No. It's my opinion for sure. He should be impeached for that and should be thrown out of office. He should be tried in the Senate, found guilty, and removed from power. Because the bottom line is that in this kind of situation, he is the one who has set the tone for the rest of the country. And if the chief law enforcement officer of the United States, which, of course, would be Gonzalez, but his boss, the boss of the chief law enforcement officer of the United States, says that it's okay to illegally tap people's phones and listen in on their conversations, then what does that say to all the law enforcement agencies out there? Does that tell them that they can do that too? You know? I think it does. I think it tells all those law enforcement agencies out there that they don't have to stick by the rules of evidence, that they don't have to stick by, you know, search and seizure laws, you know, I don't know, Fourth Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America. They don't have to do any of that stuff. Because we're a nation of men now, not of laws. Well, if you disagree with that as strongly and as vehemently as I do, I challenge you to write your senator and tell your senator. Now, here in North Carolina where I am, I've got Richard Byrd and Elizabeth Dole, two lapdogs of the Bush administration. Neither one of them would have would stand on their own two feet, you know, and oppose this president, even if, you know, you hand them $1 million and said, if you know, I'll give you $1 million to your next campaign if you'll just vote against him in this matter. They wouldn't do it. Richard Burr and Elizabeth Dole, both. I mean, they're neocons too, absolutely. And I have no respect for either one of them as a citizen of the state of North Carolina. But if you disagree with this as vehemently as I do, and you have a Democratic congressman or a Republican congressman or senator who wants to come down on the side of the Constitution of the United States of America and not on the side of illegal wiretapping, then write them a letter and encourage them to stand up and do the right thing. Hell, even if they do fall on the side of illegality, write them a letter and tell them that they're acting in complicity with an illegal government. Because not until they hear from us will they want to change their minds and do anything different. That's what we have citizens, as citizens, have to do. We have to let them know what we're thinking, what we're feeling. You know, they have to log all that stuff. Maybe that'll turn them around a little bit. I'd like to thank my good friend, my new friend, I'm going to meet him this weekend, Zach Rebich, for producing this radio program. Zach, you did a fantastic job. Thank you very, very much. You did a great, tight production today, man. Right on. I'd like to thank my good friend John Fox for being the announcer and the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services for keeping the bits and the bytes traveling at light speed through the circuitry of the Head On Radio Network computer systems by being our computer systems analyst. Gene from Oregon for being our fantastic Head On Headlines blogger. Hi-ya! He's our news ninja. I also want to thank Bob and Agnes Kincaid for being the glue that holds all this together, and also the and Ben Birch of White Rose Society for managing the streams and for keeping the archives of this program and each and every other program. For podcasts and archives, please head over to whiterosesociety.org and scroll down. You'll see my name, Bruce Birch. Thank you to the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. You guys rock. You're building the American dream one nail at a time, and here we are doing it with your support. So thank you very much, guys. You're amazing. And last but not least, thank you to all my listeners. You guys have each and every day bring a new dynamic to this program with your energy and being a part of it. And don't forget, folks, it's your democracy, too. And it's not a spectator sport. I'll be right back. That's right, 24 hours from now, or 23 hours from now, 22 hours from now, with another radio program. It's good to talk to you. We'll see you tomorrow. This has been Bruce Birch for the Head On Radio Network. Their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled.